Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host for this hour, and we're going to feature kids' shows this time. We will have an episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, an episode of Buck Rogers of the 21st Century, and that's the last show in the series, so that should be interesting. Let's listen to Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, from 1940, Flight to San Francisco.
Jack Armstrong,
the All-American Boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Well, right now, we're winding up the regular 1940 baseball season. And I can't think of a better time to remind you of something I told the Jack Armstrong listeners way back last spring, nearly 6 months ago when the baseball season started. Do you remember what I said about champion baseball performance? How those hundreds of big league stars work and train all season long to help keep in condition for winning play? Well, everything I told you last spring holds just as true today. Champions like Bob Feller of the Indians and Buck McCormick of the Reds can thank good, sound training for helping them come through the season with flying colors. The same thing goes for Barney McCoskey of the Tigers and Dixie Walker of the Dodgers. Any number of top-notch ball stars. And I want you to notice one mighty important fact. These players who know the value of training are usually right on deck to enjoy a breakfast of champions morning after morning straight through the season. Yes, this famous training breakfast so many ball stars have been eating all season long is still the number one favorite in the big leagues. And no wonder. When you wade into a heaping bowl full of those good whole wheat flakes, Wheaties, and when you eat your Wheaties with lots of milk or cream and some kind of fruit, you're having a breakfast that's an all-year, all-round winner for keen flavor and bodybuilding nourishment. Sure, those baseball champions like their Wheaties. And plenty of them eat Wheaties both in and out of season. Bob Feller himself says, "One thing I've discovered since I got into baseball is that a lot of players stick to Wheaties the year round. Now that's a pretty good sign to me that Wheaties really deliver. And as for myself, well, you'll find a package of Wheaties on my table almost every morning, winter, summer, spring, and fall. They're my favorite year-round breakfast dish, and that's for sure." Now there you have Bob Feller's tip-off to a swell training breakfast. Yes, sir. When you put that breakfast of champions on your morning lineup, you're in mighty good company. Wheaties are a big league favorite, and they're going to be your favorite too, I know, if you'll get some Wheaties right away. And now, Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Uncle Jim's high-altitude amphibian is winging its silver way westward, high above the Sierra Nevada mountains, and the mighty Pacific is rolling up on the horizon. Uncle Jim is at the controls, and Jack and Billy and Betty are peering out through the windows of the sealed cabin, trying to spot the Golden Gate of San Francisco Harbor. In that harbor lies the small ship that will take them westward to the Philippines and to the Sulu Sea in search of a wrecked yacht with its treasure of rare uranium metal, which Uncle Jim needs in his atom-splitting experiments. Listen.
Uncle Jim, is that altimeter right? Why, it reached 30,000 feet.
That's right, Jack. 30,000 feet up. Isn't that a grand view ahead? Look how the Pacific stretches out to the end of the world.
Not to the end of the world, Uncle Jim. To the Sulu Sea and the sunken yacht.
You may think that's the end of the world when we get there, Billy.
But how small the mountains look below us, Uncle Jim. And so queer. Like chocolate icing sprinkled with white sugar.
We made a forced landing among them, Betty. You wouldn't think of icing and sugar. You'd think of jagged peaks and snowfields and pray for just one level spot.
Look, we're passing right over a cloud bank. Did you ever see such colors?
Why, Jack, it's gorgeous. It looks like the golden fleece that Jason went after. I do believe if I jumped out in it, I'd just bounce up and down.
You'd bounce down right enough, Betty, right down to that chocolate icing with powdered sugar you were talking about. Look, there's a regular chasm in the clouds. Why, it's like looking straight down into the Grand Canyon.
Yes, and you can see the coastline. But I don't see San Francisco.
We'll see it as soon as we get past this cloud bank. There we are, Betty. Look just to the right of our course. See that bight that nature took out of the shoreline? That's San Francisco Harbor. And that silver thread is the longest suspension bridge in the world. It goes right across the Golden Gate.
Hey, look at that outside temperature reading. Way below zero.
Don't forget that the pressure outside of that sealed cabin is awfully low. The supercharger keeps up the pressure inside.
It's so warm in here and so comfortable that you can't believe that bright sunlight outside so cold and thin.
You'd believe it soon enough if this sealed cabin should get punctured. The air would shoot out like a tire with a blowout and you'd be gasping like a fish out of water.
Stand by the supercharger, Jack, and get ready to control the pressure. It's time we drop down toward the Golden Gate.
Right. I'll keep her at normal atmospheric pressure all the way down.
Easy, Jack. Not too soon. Whoa.
My mistake.
Jump on Jiminy, Jack. Don't scare me that way. For a moment, I thought all the air had escaped.
That was almost serious. I had the wrong valve.
Down we go.
Oh, are we really here so soon? Well, it's only a few hours since we left Hudson.
Well, that's the beauty of Uncle Jim's substratosphere ship. Flies so high, there's not much air resistance.
But just think, crossing half the continent in just a few hours. Why, I'll bet Blackbeard's still wondering what happened to him.
I bet a million he'll be more careful next time when he tries to steal Uncle Jim's papers.
But just think, Jack, how close he came. And if he had got away with that chart...
If he'd gotten away with it, we'd have chased him to the Philippines to get it back. Billy, think what would happen if that gang got a hold of that uranium.
Why, it might be all they need is put the enemy before our scientists did it.
And in that case, other people would have airplanes and rocket ships that would make this ship look like a toy. Why, with the power they could get from the atom, there's nothing they wouldn't be able to do.
Watch that pressure, Jack. We're getting pretty low.
I'll equalize it, Uncle Jim. We'll soon be low enough to turn off the supercharger.
Oh, Jack, now I can see the suspension bridge clearly. But what are all those funny little dots in the harbor?
Yachts, fishing boats, and steamers, Betty.
Is our boat there?
It's there, Betty, at anchor off one of the yacht clubs. When we drop down lower, I'll fly over it. She's going to look terribly small.
But small boats are just as safe in storms as larger ones, Betty.
Safer sometimes, Jack, if they're well rigged. A small boat rides the big waves like an eggshell, while a large boat crashes through the waves and takes a lot of punishment.
Just the same, Uncle Jim. It'll be all right with me if we don't get within speaking distance of a typhoon.
We shouldn't if we get radio warnings in time. Pressure equalized, Jack?
Just about, Uncle Jim.
And here we go on a dive for the Golden Gate.
Oh, the bottom's falling out of my stomach.
Same here, Betty.
Oh, look at the bridge. It's jumping up to hit us.
There, we're easing out of the dive now.
Feel better now, Betty?
Oh, if I could only catch my stomach and tie it down to one place. There, it's gone back where it belongs. Oh, with the bridge, wonderful. And look at all the steamers and sailboats.
Well, you set her down, Uncle Jim. At the yacht club?
No, Jack. There's enough runway inside the breakwater. I'll set her down beyond. Shall we fly over our boat?
Oh, sure.
All right, I'll circle it. There you are. See that little two-master? That's the Spindrift. White hull and gray deck. That's the ship that's going to carry us to the Sulu Sea.
Oh, isn't she a beauty? But Uncle Jim, she is small.
She'll look larger when you're on her. And when Jack and Billy fight that mainsail in a heavy blow, they'll think she's plenty large.
There's someone going up to her in a skiff.
Probably the caretaker.
Hand me the binoculars, Billy, and I'll look him over. Say, he looks like a foreigner from here.
How's that?
Not an American. Looks like a mixture of different countries.
Are you sure? Look carefully, Jack. This may be important.
Well, I can't see him now. The right wing is in the way. But he certainly wasn't an American, Uncle Jim.
You gonna set her down now, Uncle Jim?
Yes, Billy, in the next cove by those docks, the airport crew expect me there. Listen to you, Jack. There's something I want you to do as soon as I can get you ashore.
What is it, Uncle Jim?
I may be all wrong, Jack. That visit to the Spindrift may mean nothing. On the other hand, it may mean a great deal. I want you to hop a taxi as soon as you get ashore, get back to the yacht club and see what the chap's up to.
Why, Uncle Jim, do you think...
I don't think anything, Billy. This gang has unlimited money behind them. They'll give us trouble if they can. Be careful when you get to the boat. This chap may be dangerous.
We'll be careful, Uncle Jim.
Find out if you can what he's doing on the Spindrift. If you can keep him aboard without using force, all the better. But watch out for rough stuff. This gang knows a thing or two in the manhandling game. I happen to know that one of this gang is an expert in jiu-jitsu, so do as I say.
We will, Uncle Jim. Gosh, I don't want to tangle with that guy who can press a finger in your back and make you turn handspring.
All safety vests. Belts tight. Coming down.
Beautiful, Uncle Jim. Beautiful landing.
There's a boat out to meet us already. Is he one of your airport crew, Uncle Jim?
Looks like it, Jack. Now, you and Billy get to shore, hop a taxi, and see what's going on at the yacht club.
We sure will, Uncle Jim. And if that man's aboard, we'll keep him there till you arrive.
But not by force, mind you.
Okay, Uncle Jim. Help me with the steel door, Billy. It's stuck.
Okay. There.
Oh, here's the boat binocle, Jim.
Afternoon, Captain Fairfield. Happy landing, I see.
Hello there, Adams. Has the airport crew arrived yet?
They're on their way, sir. They'll take the ship to the airport.
Good. Take Jack and Billy ashore quick and come back for us.
As you say, sir. Watch your step, Mr. Jack.
Okay. Easy, Billy. Okay.
Just sit down in the stern seat and I'll have you ashore in a jiffy.
Good luck.
See you later, Billy.
Jack, why should Uncle Jim be so worried about somebody going off to the spin?
Yes, sir, it's me, Billy. But you can bet a million that Uncle Jim never gets worried unless there's something to worry about.
Well, he wasn't worried until you told him that chap was a foreigner.
Well, that's enough to worry anyone, considering what we know. That gang that's trying to locate the uranium has brains and money behind it.
Yeah, they must have money, or they'd never have wasted sending Blackbeard to recover that scrap of a chart.
Here we are. I'll swing you around stern two, and you can step out.
Okay, thanks. Come on, Jack.
Thanks a million. Hey, where can we get a taxi?
You'll get one in the back if you don't stand
right. Hey, look out there.
Oh, boy, is that service. Hop in, Billy. To the yacht club, driver.
But, Jack, what can anyone hope to find on the Spindrift now? We haven't even been on board ourselves, except for Uncle Jim.
You've got me there, Billy. But you can bet that something's afoot, or Uncle Jim wouldn't pack us off this way.
Do you suppose that we could handle a chap who knows jujitsu?
I doubt it, unless we closed in quickly and landed a haymaker before he could pull his fancy stuff.
Maybe we had better be careful when we go aboard.
We're almost there now. It's only a short run. See, there's the clubhouse. And look, there's the Spindrift.
Yeah, the skiff has still made fast to her. He's still aboard, Jack.
We'll soon find out what he's up to. Right here, driver. Keep the change, driver, and thanks. Come on, Billy. We may leave the Spindrift any minute.
But whose skiff can we use to get out to the Spindrift?
Maybe our skiff's at the dock.
Yeah, there it is, Jack. The name Spindrift's on it. It's got a pair of oars, too, Jack. Jump in. I'll untie the painter.
Okay. We don't want him to know we're coming aboard. I'll pull up ahead of her and let the tide and wind carry us down.
Good idea, Jack. And as soon as the tide sweeps us on her, I'll fend off so we won't fall. Then I'll make fast.
That's right. Hang this rope fender over the gunwales to keep the boats from knocking together. And we'll slip up on deck and see what he's doing below.
And we'll keep him on board until Uncle Jim arrives.
Not if we have to use force, Billy. Uncle Jim told us not to hold him by force, and orders are orders.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Gosh, I'd hate to see him get away.
Am I heading right? This wind and tide tend to throw me off my course.
A little more to the right, Jack.
Say, maybe we can keep him on board without using force.
Against his will?
Sure. Suppose, just suppose that his oars got lost, and our oars, too.
You mean that?
That's right. We'll slip our oars overboard and his, too, before we climb up to the deck. Then he can't leave.
But wait a minute, Jack. Neither could we.
That's right. We'd all have to stay aboard until Uncle Jim came and got us.
All right, Jack. I'm with you through thick and thin.
Attaboy, Billy. Quiet now. We've come far enough. I'll ship my oars, and we'll let the wind and tide carry us down.
I can't hear him on board, can you, Jack?
No, but he must be there.
He must have a key to the cabin.
Key or a burglar's, Jimmy?
Are we going to make it? Looks like the wind will take us out too much.
No, we'll make it. Easy now, we're getting close. I'll reach out and grab his skiff, and you fend off so we don't...
Here, I've got his oars. Overboard with him. And ours too, Jack. Quiet now.
You think he heard us?
I don't hear a sound, Jack.
Okay, then, up we go. I think we've got it.
Now what? Do you think the mysterious prowler did hear Jack and Billy? And what is he doing on the Spindrift? You can bet he's up to no good or Uncle Jim wouldn't be so worried about him. And when he finds that he can't get back to shore before Uncle Jim arrives, well, the fur will be flying. So listen in, all of you, at the same time tomorrow and see what happens in the new and thrilling adventure when the strange visitor comes face to face with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Now, there's a world's champion breakfast waiting for you every morning this week if you'll get some Wheaties in a hurry. Eat those good Wheaties flakes with lots of milk and fruit, and you're having a genuine breakfast of champions. You'd better get those Wheaties now.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties? For wheat is the best food of man.
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions.
Jack Armstrong and Flight to San Francisco from 1940. Now it's time for Buck Rogers of the 21st century. Now it's time for Buck Rogers of the 25th century. And a kind of a sad day for Rocket Rangers everywhere, as this is the last show in the series from 1947.
Rocket Rangers, man your post, while Post Corn Toasties, the tender, crisp, fresher cornflakes, take you beyond rocket power. Beyond the atomic bomb. Beyond the future. To Buck Rogers in the 25th century. We are now 500 years in the future with Buck Rogers on the planetoid Magna. By means of the new frequencies installed in one's brain by Dr. Huer, Number One is now able to issue commands to all the robots on the planetoid, and secure from any attack by the machines, Buck, Wilma, and One have come to the headquarters building to arrest Killer Kane and his criminal companions. Kane challenges Buck to a fight, and Buck accepts. They throw aside their weapons, and with Wilma, the two giant robots, and Bran standing by, the fight is on. Buck sidesteps Kane's first bull-like rush and drives a hard right home to the killer's jaw. Kane shakes it off and charges again. This time, his fist crashes against the side of Buck's head. Buck staggers back, and Kane is on top of him. His great weight knocks Buck to the floor. But before he can be pinned down, Buck rolls aside and is on his feet once more. Now, moving with even greater speed, Buck lashes lefts and rights to Kane's face. But nothing can stop the killer from boring in. Buck is forced to give ground, ducking, sidestepping, keeping just out of Kane's reach. Still jabbing hard straight left to the face. The criminal roars.
Just let me get my hands on you once.
Keep it out, Buck. Keep him away with that left.
The fight surges back and forth in the center of the hall. Bran, cowering against the wall, slowly starts edging toward the windows. And at last, he reaches them.
One, Bran's getting away. Look. He's going out the window.
Yes.
Go after him, one. Stop him.
He will be stopped. I wish to see the finish of this fight between good and evil.
But it's unfair. Kane's so much bigger and stronger.
Buck has the advantage of a brain.
Yes, but he... Good work, Buck. Keep it up. Oh, Buck, you've got to win.
Gosh, Mr. Williams, I can hardly keep my mind on what's happening up in Buck Rogers' world. I'm so anxious to know more about that circus coming to town.
You mean the circus coming to your grocery store?
Yeah, and that's what throws me. How can there be lions and monkeys and trapeze acts in a grocery store?
Don't forget, there's a whirling merry-go-round, too, and dancers. Twinkle Toes, the dancing clown, Tap and Tom, the tap dancer, and that spectacular, stupendous, fine-chilling act, the human cannonball.
Gosh, in a grocery store. Well, tell me, how can a fella find out more about all this?
Simple. Just tune in next Sunday afternoon and every Sunday in April to the House of Mystery. It's on the same station, and see your newspaper for the time. And you know, boys and girls, a really good breakfast starts with a heaping bowl of the freshest, crispest cornflakes possible, Post-Corn Toasties. And don't forget, listen next Sunday afternoon to House of Mystery on this same station. Learn more about the greatest show on earth in your grocery store.
Rocket Rangers, man your post as we forge ahead in time 500 years. As the fight between Buck and Kane continues, Buck finds it more and more difficult to keep away from Kane. At last, his huge hands grasp Buck's shoulders. Buck is unable to free himself. Then, swiftly, Kane lifts him into the air and throws him across the room. Buck crashes into the desk. But before Kane can follow up his advantage, Buck has jumped to the top of the desk. As Kane charges, he dives at him. And once again, the two men hurtle to the floor. Buck is on his feet instantly. Kane is slower in rising. He shakes his head before he starts for Buck again. But now, drawing on his last reserves of strength, Buck redoubles the speed of his attack. He hammers at the killer's face with left and right until the larger man is completely bewildered. Then he shifts his attack to the body. Now Kane is only trying to cover up. He snarls like a wounded animal. He turns his back and stoops to the floor. Buck drops his guard. Then he sees what Kane is about to do.
Buck, he's going for his gun.
As Kane raises the pistol, Buck Wright drives against Kane's jaw. The Great Hulk wavers for a moment. The pistol drops from his nerveless fingers, and Killer Kane drops to the ground.
Buck staggers, catches himself, then puts a hand to his head as Wilma runs to him.
Buck! Oh, Buck, you did it. You beat him. Are you all right?
Oh, boy.
Are you all right, Buck?
I'll tell you later. What a tough customer he turned out to be.
Well, he isn't very tough right now.
X, you will come with me. We will find the others.
Where's one going?
Brand slipped out of here while you and Kane were fighting.
He'll head for a spaceship. He's trying to make a getaway.
Don't worry about it, Buck. We saw him leave.
Well, then why didn't one go after him?
He didn't want to miss anything. And I was just as happy to leave him here. Oh, at the time, it looked as if Kane might win.
Huh. That's a fine thing to say. Didn't you have any confidence in me?
Tell the truth, Buck. Were you always sure you'd win?
Then when he first hit me, I thought I'd been kicked by a mule.
I have my first aid kit. I'll see what I can do to fix up your face.
How does it look?
Oh, it'll be hard to tell until we can clean it up a little. I imagine it'll look lovely. Something like a black and blue sunset.
I'll never mind it. First, you'd better tie up Kane and then go after Brand.
You can leave him and Bassett to One. I'm sure One sent a message to the Tens to pick them up. They won't get away.
Okay. We'll just make sure that Kane doesn't. Then we'll call Doc and have him bring the submarine down. It's hard to believe, Wilma. But it looks as if the mission has been accomplished.
An hour later, Buck and Wilma watch the submarine land outside the headquarters building. Dr. Huer hurries in to meet them.
Doc, Why, what's happened to your face?
Why, don't you like sunset?
What happened?
I ran into a door.
You sure it wasn't a stone wall?
You should see what happened to the other fellow.
I'd like to. Where is he?
Over there on the floor.
Killer Kane! Captured at last, Buck. It seems too good to be true.
I knew you'd recognize him, Doc. He looks just the way he used to.
Oh, well, not quite.
Yes, Rogers. I'll kill him.
The man is obviously delirious.
You tricked me.
Ah, it's a good trick, too. You should learn it. They call it a right to the jaw, Kane.
What are you going to do with me?
I'm going to take you back to Earth.
Then what?
Then you'll get what you deserve.
I got a right to a trial.
You have one.
But it won't last long.
Look, Roger, maybe we can work a deal.
Fight with the Supreme Court of the Earth.
But here comes One now, and he doesn't have Brand or Bassett with him.
One, where are they?
Brand and Bassett have been captured and placed on board the submarine.
Oh, good.
They have been placed in the hospital.
The hospital?
In attempting to escape, they damaged themselves.
Seriously, I hope.
The damage is reparable. From them, we learned what happened to X's brain.
Well, tell us.
Where's X now?
He has gone to the laboratory, where he will wait for me.
Well, what happened, One?
X wished to contact me on the Earth and ordered that the power of his brain be increased.
The same way Dr. Huer stepped yours up?
Yes. It was necessary to disassemble the brain. Kane, Brand, and Bassett arrived before the operation had been completed by the laboratory technician.
Oh, I see.
Brand stole the section of the brain which contained the law. And as a result, X was not able to distinguish between right and wrong. He carried out Kane's orders without questioning them.
And through him, Kane was able to control all the robots on the planetoid.
That is correct.
But One, where is the missing section? It must be replaced.
It has been found.
Where?
In a safe on board the spaceship belonging to these men.
Has it been damaged?
No. The missing section will be replaced within the next hour.
Okay, One, go to it.
With the law restored to X's brain, Magna will be safe from all criminal attacks.
And safe for the colonists from the Earth to come here.
That is correct.
All right, One, go to it. Get him fixed up. We'll load Kane on board the submarine. Be ready to start by the time you've finished.
I will carry Kane to the submarine.
Oh, I can manage that.
No. If it were possible for a machine to feel pleasure, then I would say this task will be a pleasant one for me.
Hey, let go of me. Put me down.
It is not advisable for you to struggle. As the inhabitants of the Earth have been heard to say, you, brother, are all washed up.
Well, Mr. Williams, I feel kind of sad. Honest. Because this is our last day hearing Buck Rogers.
I guess a whole lot of boys and girls feel that way, Tom. And I know that the Post people hope you've all enjoyed the excitement and wonder of the 25th century.
Gosh, who wouldn't? And I hope all the Buck Rogers fans have become Post-Corn Toasties fans.
I really believe, Tom, that just one trial of Post-Corn Toasties convinces everybody that they're the freshest, crispest cornflakes possible.
All I know is after the first bowlful, my family liked them so much that now we have Post-Corn Toasties every morning. But say, Mr. Williams, maybe some fellas and girls missed hearing about that circus in a grocery store.
Well, I was just about to say that if all the boys and girls will listen next Sunday afternoon and every Sunday in April to House of Mystery, they'll find out more about how the greatest show on earth is going to be in local grocery stores. So remember, make a date. Next Sunday afternoon on this station, hear House of Mystery. Look in your newspaper for the time. And say, hope you'll all keep right on enjoying the crisper, fresher cornflakes every morning. Hope you'll all start each day bright with Post-Corn Toasties.
Rocket Rangers, man your post as we drive on into the future.
The missing section of X's brain is replaced, and after it has been thoroughly tested, one is satisfied that the management of the planetoid will be in safe hands once more. Then, one boards a submarine, which is ready for the takeoff, and joins Buck, Wilma, and Dr. Huer in the control room. Now, Buck is at the controls with Wilma beside him.
Gyroscopic elevator.
Set.
Sensitizers.
Full power.
Rocket Rangers, man your posts. Stand by for takeoff. Here we go. Have you called the president yet, Buck?
No, Doc. I wanted to be able to tell him that we were on our way home.
Well, let one take the controls. Call him now.
Okay, one, take over. Straight into space, then circle the planetoid and head for the Earth.
It is in my brain.
Yes. No, wait, wait.
Wait, what's the matter? I've already called him.
I'd forgotten. It's the middle of the night in Niagara.
Oh, he won't mind waking up for this news.
What's the idea? Call me in the morning.
Yes, sir. You say he wouldn't mind, woman? Yes, sir.
Buck, is that you? I was asleep. I didn't realize it was your telephone that was ringing.
I'm sorry to have disturbed you, sir.
No, that's perfectly all right. What do you have to report? What's happened?
The mission has been accomplished, sir. We're on our way home.
What? You really found Kane? You've taken him prisoner?
Kane and Brand and Bassett. All three of them are in the hospital on the submarine.
Did you say the hospital?
Well, they need a little medical attention at the moment.
Oh, yes.
But they're under heavy guard. They won't escape.
Buck, this is wonderful news. The Earth, the whole solar system is grateful.
We feel pretty happy about it ourselves,
sir. I deserve anything we can do for you. First, you get that leave I've been promising. And your whole crew.
That's a dangerous promise, sir. Whenever you mention leave, something always happens.
Well, we won't let it happen. No, Buck, I promise, and I'll keep my promise.
Okay, sir.
Now, you just hurry home.
We will, sir. Good night, sir. Well, a vacation, gang. Where shall we go?
California.
Oh? Look, what about you and me going to Niagara Falls?
Well, that's just outside the capital.
I know. But in the 20th century, it had quite a reputation as a vacation spot. I'll tell you all about it before we get down to Earth.
And so the submarine soars on, blazing its way on through space. Beyond rocket power, beyond the atomic bomb, beyond the future, with Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Buck Rogers with John Larkin, Virginia Vass, and Edgar Staley has been coming to you by Post-Corn Toasties.
Beginning next week, Buck Rogers will no longer be heard at this time. Instead, Mutual will present a dramatic program of best-loved children's stories, Adventure Parade. Be sure and tune in at this time for Adventure Parade. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Now we're heading north up to Canada for an episode of The Challenge of the Yukon with the Wonder Dog King. And the Wonder Dog King takes part in this episode in a special way because King spots a murder from 1943.
The Challenge of the Yukon. King, and you huskies! King, the swiftest, strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon.
Oh,
Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the Yukon during the Gold Rush of 98. That was the year that brought over 50,000 men swarming into the Klondike region, and the greed for gold led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, the force preserved a splendid record in preserving the right. The challenge of the North was answered, and justice ruled triumphant. Sergeant Preston was breaking camp early one morning, the icy cold of the North chilling his face. Suddenly, as he turned from the fire, he noticed King. The dog seemed to be listening intently, his nose in the air, every muscle momentarily tense. In spite of himself, the Mountie stood still, but the quiet of the Yukon seemed to him unbroken. It was then that King, a strange, savage growl in his throat, ran from the Mountie toward a line of pine trees.
King! Well, he heard something, I'm sure of it. But what? Well, there's only one way to find out. Go after him. He stopped ahead there. What is it, fella? What's wrong? I don't see... Well, so that's it. Yeah. Looks like you chased someone out of here, King. Yes. Whoever it was, he's almost out of sight. But why? Why would King standing over by the campfire... But... That man's retracing his tracks. He came up to here and then stopped. Then walked over and stood here. He could see perfectly from here. And he must have been watching us when King sent something wrong. King, old fella, I don't know what I'd do without you. But this is one time I'm stopped. He got away without me hearing him. I guess your bark's covered any noises he made. I couldn't even get a look at him. Why would anyone come up here, stand, and watch us? Was he intending to head back for Fort Munn? Or did you make up his mind for him, Well, since we're heading in his direction, maybe we'll just keep to those tracks.
Returning to his campsite, Sergeant Preston scattered the fire, preparing to follow the mysterious traveler who had aroused King. Once on the trail, the great dog covered distance quickly, keeping to the tracks cut clearly in the snow. But as they approached Fort Munn, the Mountie found that other tracks obscured those made by the stranger, and it was more and more difficult to separate one from another, till he was forced to admit the hopelessness of pursuing the man further.
It's not wrong for anyone to ride so far on a trail and then change his mind. Certainly there's no ground for suspicion there. Oh, King! Oh, you huskies! Oh. Well, there's one thing you're sure of in Fort Munn. This cafe opens the first thing in the morning, and it's the last building to be darkened at night. Well, King, we're bound to find some news in here.
Sergeant Preston!
Molliver, hello there. How are you?
Mighty glad to see you. That's what I am.
Well, now, that's what I call a real welcome. What? What's wrong? You look like you've lost your claim or something.
It'd be truer if you'd say I look like I lost my best friend.
Your best friend?
Sergeant, when I found Mike dead yesterday, I prayed that you'd come to Fort Munn.
Mike?
They shot him in the back, dirty yellow skunks. He didn't have a chance. It was snowing when I found him. No tracks that I could make out.
Oh. He was murdered.
Yeah. If I knew who did it, I'd... Well, back where I come from, we have a name for men that shoot from ambush.
Where'd you find him?
Out near those two big rocks west of here.
Oh, yes, yes, I know the place.
He never did anybody any harm, Sergeant.
Oh, no, Oliver, wait a minute. Let's go over this slowly. Now, you say you found him.
Yes. Yes, I found him.
What reason would anyone have for killing Mike? Unless...
somebody could have killed him for his gold. That's what everybody here in town thinks.
And you?
Well, I guess that must be it. Fred Johnson said Mike drew out every bit of the dust he had in the bank.
Hmm.
You can't argue with a banker.
You mean you'd have an argument to give Fred about that?
Oh, it's not that. But you see, Mike never came to town without stopping to see me.
Yes, yes, I know.
According to Fred, Mike drew out his dust and then headed back toward his claim. If I didn't know he went to the bank, I'd say he was shot on his way into town.
I see.
But I don't know. I'm just glad you're here, Sergeant, because I want to see the man that murdered Mike hang. And the sooner he does, the easier I'll rest.
I can't promise you how soon he'll be brought to justice. But he will be. You didn't find any of the dust on him?
Not a trace of it. Even the poke he carried with him was gone. Oh, here I'm keeping you out in the cold. I guess you're going into the cafe.
Well, I thought I'd find some news by going in talking to the boys. But we've had enough news for a while. King?
Hey, that's funny. Look at King. He's watching Fred and that man with him.
You don't know who he is.
No.
Well, Sergeant Preston. Hey, what's that big yapping for?
Quiet, King. Quiet, boy. Yeah, that's better, boy. How are you, Fred?
Fine. Hello, Oliver.
Fred.
Going inside?
Why, yes, we're going in. How about it, Oliver?
Well, I'm sure not going in to celebrate anything.
Yeah, still feel pretty bad about Mike Oliver, huh? I don't blame you. We all do. Oh, excuse me a minute. I see Joe Higgins over there. I want to talk to him.
Sure, go ahead, Fred.
I wondered if he'd introduce his friend.
Friend? Maybe he thought you knew him.
Well, hardly. If I did, I'd have spoken to him. No? No, I don't know him. But King here does.
Sergeant Preston watched the two men make their way through the room. His face was thoughtful as he noticed the banker speak for a moment to Joe Higgins at the far end of the bar. Then the two walked to a table in the corner. The man looked over his shoulder quickly as if to make sure no one was listening before he spoke.
That's the one. I told you I saw him, Monty.
You told me you were ready to drop him when that dog started for you.
That dog. I should have dropped him.
Why didn't you?
Because when that mutt started coming at me, that policeman was right behind him with a gun in his hand.
You could have stopped them both.
Not the way that dog was coming, I couldn't. I came back here to warn you.
Warn me? Listen, we're in the clear.
Yeah. But that Monty was talking to the friend of the prospectors.
What difference does that make? Oliver doesn't suspect a thing. You're new here. You just came in from the States, see?
Just so long as you don't say where in the States.
You're safe here.
I got my fellow looking out from behind bars, Johnson. You better handle this right.
If you keep your mouth shut and don't run from every loose lead dog in the Yukon, we won't have anything to worry about.
I ain't running from any dog. But Preston's one Monty I don't aim to cross.
Preston's like all the rest of them. If you're smart, you stay with me and you'll clean up enough to leave this country a rich man.
I always wondered how bankers got their money.
It's an easier way to get gold than digging for it.
Though he talked to Oliver, Sergeant Preston watched the two men at the far end of the room closely.
King here looks like he's waiting for something.
He's just given me an idea, Oliver.
How can a dog... Well,
King and I work together. He's been right every time he's ever started after something.
Well, they do say a dog's got a sixth sense.
Well, I don't know whether it's a sixth sense or not, but if that's what they call it, I won't disagree.
Where are you going?
I just want to talk to Fred.
Oh.
We thought we'd join you, Fred.
Sure. Pull up a chair.
Here, I'll take that one, Sergeant.
You're a stranger in Fort Mon, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. You and the sergeant don't know each other, Slim. Sergeant, this is Slim West. Slim, Sergeant Preston.
Hi. How do you do? Staying with Fred, Slim?
Yes, he's staying with me for a while. That is, until he gets staked out on his own.
Well, it's mighty nice of you to help him out.
Oh, it isn't as if we were strangers. Say, what do you two have?
Forget about me, Fred. I'm not drinking.
Nor am I. You go right ahead and order.
Well, if you're sure you don't want anything. Two specials, Slim.
Great. Oliver told me about Mike.
Yes, that was a shame. Mike was one of the... Well, I guess you could call him one of the finest men here in Fort Mon.
I understand he drew his dust out of the bank a short time before he was murdered.
Yes, sir, he did. And I told him it was very unwise. You know how Mike was, headstrong. You couldn't tell him anything once he made up his mind. Do you think you'll catch the murderer, Sergeant? Everyone knows he was robbed, killed for his gold.
Sometimes takes quite a while to bring a killer to justice.
You've got a sizable job in your hands. On account of the snowstorm, there were no tracks. Ah, here come the drinks, Slim.
Here you are, Jensen.
There, that's it, Clem. I'll take care of it, Slim. Let's see.
It seems as if the cafe's nearly empty. I guess you'll be getting back to the bank, Fred, huh?
Can't be away too long. There you are, Clem.
Yes, thanks.
Would you mind if I look at that poke, Fred?
This poke?
Yes, I thought I saw some initials on it.
No. You imagine things, Sergeant. I've never had my initials on this.
Oh, don't put it away, Fred. I asked to see it.
I'm not putting it away.
The gun.
I was reaching
for it. Fred, if it's your poke, let's see it.
It's not my poke.
That's what I thought.
You know, Fred, you can't
have that. So, I'll hand it to you. You noticed something I overlooked. I forgot about initials on that poke.
What's this all about?
It's all about how Mike was murdered, Oliver.
What?
Yes, murdered. You were right. He probably didn't go to the bank. He didn't get that far.
That's about as far as you'll get, Monty.
He couldn't have drawn out dust that wasn't there.
Go on. Let them hear how much you know about it. You won't live to tell anyone else.
Fred, please. I don't know nothing about this.
You stay where you are. Maybe you'd like to hear the sergeant tell his story of how I killed Mike Gallagher. And when he finishes, I can tell you what will happen.
I can't believe it.
I'll put this gun in my pocket, and you'll all walk in front of me out of here.
Then you'll be found like Mike was found.
You won't get away with it, Fred.
That's what you think.
We'll be seen leaving here with you.
And by the time you're found, I'll be well on my way to Skagway in a boat out of here. No, Marty, it's no use. You're taking orders from me.
Not much.
All right, King, get aboard.
I'll get him myself.
Out of the way, Slim.
You ain't stopping me.
Slim!
I got the gun. King knocked it right out of his hand.
Wait! This dog, get him away from me!
All right, King. All right, boy. Well, I'll put these handcuffs on you, Fred, just so you won't reach for a gun again.
Slim, I guess you'll have to carry Slim. That was a real shock you gave him, Sergeant. But I never saw anything like King. Talk about sixth sense.
Well, King's responsible for catching these murderers, Oliver. Slim must have been leaving Fort Munn this morning when he saw me breaking camp, getting ready to come through. He wanted to warn Fred, so he came back here. How King knew he was watching or what his intentions were, I don't know. But when we met Fred and Slim outside the cafe, he started growling.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that was when I began wondering. I wondered why Slim would warn Fred, a policeman, was headed this way, until I remembered Oliver saying he suspected Mike hadn't been to the bank. It would be simple enough for Fred to make it seem that Mike had drawn out his dust, when in reality he'd been stealing it.
And when you saw the initials on the poke?
I said I thought I saw some initials on it.
What? You mean there aren't any initials?
Well, you'll have to look to see. Fred wasn't sure either. He just knew he was carrying around Mike's poke of gold, and his conscience did the rest.
Well, I'll be doggone.
Yes, King, the case is closed.
Upholding the motto of the Northwest Mounted Police, Sergeant Preston and the great dog King maintain the right and get their man. Don't miss their next thrilling adventure when they meet the challenge of the Yukon once again on Saturday at the same time.
Oh, King!
Challenge of the Yukon, a copyrighted feature of the Challenge of the Yukon Incorporated, brought to you every Saturday at this time, originated in the transcription studios of WXYZ Detroit. The characters and events in tonight's drama were fictitious. Bill Morgan speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
For our final show this week, we'll stay up north in Canada for an episode of Blair of the Mounties, the Cedar Lake Mystery.
Blair of the Mounties, a story of the Royal Northwest Mounted Police. We present the seventh episode in Blair of the Mounties. Let us picture for a moment the beauty of the North Country in the fall. The still, hazy days of Indian summer. The scarlet flame of the maple leaves against the deep green of the spruce. The quiet lakes, shining like jewels in the calm sunshine. A vast, silent land, where there are no cities, no crowds. A land that draws men back to it from all the busy turmoil of the outer world.
Well, I guess this is Fort McAllister. Looks to be a landing over there. What do you say, Doctor?
Yes, yes, that's it. Better turn in, George. Ah, this is the life, Catherine. Just look at that long stretch of river. How quiet it is in the sunshine.
I hope you're satisfied. Now we've arrived at the place you're always talking about. I hope we get a decent place to sleep.
Oh, come now, Catherine. It'll do you good to rough it a little. This is just what you need after all those parties in New York.
Personally, I'd be glad when we get back to civilization.
Hello. Who's that old gent on the bank?
Good day, Dave.
We're looking for Mr. McGregor, the Hudson Bay factor.
Well, no. I'm Angus McGregor. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, we're up here on a hunting trip, Mr. McGregor. My name's Manning. We have a letter from Stewart, your company agent in New York.
Aye. Glad to meet you, sir. I had word for Stewart.
Ah, good. This is Dr. Gibson and Mrs. Gibson.
Who are you, ma'am?
How do you do, sir?
Will you no come ashore and step over to the fort?
Well, thanks. Come on, Kate.
Gracious, yes. I am glad to get out of that wretched canoe.
All right. Oh, coming, Doctor?
No, I think I'll sit here a while and smoke my pipe. You two run along.
Oh, all right. Well, Mr. McGregor, how's the hunting up here?
There's plenty of it. Elk and mule deer and caribou. And then there's swans of geese and duck. And all the fishing you'll want in the lake.
That's the stuff. But how about beaver and otter and so on?
Nah, Mr. Manning. The season's no open. It's too early. You cannot touch the beaver.
What? But say, what's to stop us from picking up a few specimens away up here in this wilderness?
We'll certainly offense to you. But I wouldn't be trying it. You'll hear the mounted police after you, quick as a flash. They're awful efficient, you ken.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm not figuring to break the law, understand. Oh, I've heard of the mounted police, of course. Rather a romantic lot with that comic opera uniform of theirs.
I will. You'll find there's nothing romantic about them when it comes to police work.
Well, I suppose a $10 bill would loosen things up some.
Footman, be careful what you say. If one of the laddies in the red coats puts his hand on you, the money and influence in the world wouldn't save you. Wish no. Here's one of the police, the new.
Hello, Angus.
Yeah, good morning, Sergeant. Shake hands with Mr. Manning. He's up here for the hunting.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Manning.
How are you, Sergeant? Well, well. All the majesty of the law, eh?
Anything I can do for you, Mr. Manning?
Well, not at present. You and I'll have to get better acquainted. I may want a little information.
That'd be of service, Mr. Manning.
Well, Mr. Manning, bring the lady up to the fort, and I'll be seeing you later on.
All right, Mr. McGregor.
Sergeant, I was just wondering about yon hunting party that went up to Cedar Lake yesterday.
Funny you should say that. I've been wondering about them, too.
Eh? What do you think of them?
Oh, I don't know. I like Dr. Gibson very much.
Aye, he looks like a fine mon. He's a famous surgeon, they tell me, and a real sportsman.
Yes, the sort of man one likes to see up here. That fellow Manning got on my nerves a bit. Wonder why the doctor brought him up here.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was the wife's doing. You know, I didn't like him myself. And he's awful friendly with Mrs. Gibson.
Yes, of course, he's more his own age.
You know, Sergeant, I hate to be talking about a woman. But there's something that's no just right about Mrs. Gibson.
Oh, well, it's no funeral of ours. She's just a spoiled city woman, used to luxury and admiration.
I'm thinking there's more to it than that.
What do you mean, Angus?
Nathan, of course, Sergeant, but... I would never want anything to happen. You see, I'm responsible to the company, and I just wanted to put you on your guard.
Yeah, but I don't see why...
Now you do this for me, Sergeant. Just keep an eye on that party in case anything happens.
Certainly, Angus. I'd half a mind to anyway. Joe the Indian has a trap line up at Cedar Lake. He's up there every day getting ready for winter. I'll talk to him.
Fine. That's all I want.
Oh,
My, my, that white fish tasted good.
Oh, it wasn't so bad. If only everything wasn't so sticky. Oh, I haven't had a decent bath for a week. How much longer do we stay here, Henry?
Why, we've only just got here, Catherine. Why don't you try a swim in the lake? The water's beautiful.
Goodness, me swim in that cold water? Nothing doing.
No, all right. I tell you, let's go down to the pool above the rapids. You know there are a couple of beavers working there? The cutest little beggars you ever saw.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, go on and leave me in peace. I want a read.
Oh, all right, my dear, all right. I'll be back in about half an hour.
Don't hurry. Beavers, huh? Picture me crawling through the grass to look at beavers. Oh, hello, George.
Hello, sweetness.
Daddy gone?
Yes, he's gone. For heaven's sake, shut the door. He's gone to look at the beavers.
Well, what are you flying the storm signals for? Anything the matter?
Matter. Everything's the matter. You know, I detest this filthy country just as much as Henry raves about it. Do you hear me? I'm sick of it. Morning, noon, and night, all I hear is beautiful scenery, beautiful sunsets, beautiful nights. Oh, give me a cigarette before I choke.
Well, well, lady, you sure got a full head of steam on.
Well, when are you going to do something? You know what we came up here for.
Now, easy, Bright Eyes, easy. What's the use of blowing off?
Well, why don't you get busy?
That's all right. I'm working on it, but we've got to look out for that sergeant.
You're not afraid of him, are you?
Afraid? Well, no, but he's no fool.
No, he's a different friend to the men one usually meets. I tried to make up to him at the fort, but there was nothing doing.
Yes, I noticed that.
Oh, well, it was nothing serious, George. He just looked right through me with those gray eyes of his. Guess I'm not... He's not my sort. I suppose it's because you and I are both so rotten that we get along together.
Well, that's all right with me, baby. Say, you checked up on that will? Everything goes to you?
Oh, sure. I checked up in New York. It's all mine if anything happens to Henry.
Okay. And say, don't get so sore at Henry. Just kid him along, see?
Oh, all right. Leave it to me. Look out. Here we come.
No.
Well, 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 Catherine. Still reading? My, but there's a beautiful moon.
Yes, I was admiring it through the window, Henry.
That's right, my dear. You know the only way to real happiness is to be conscious of the beauty around you.
Hello, is that you, Kate?
Yes, I heard that call of yours. What do you want?
Listen, that Indian they put on to watch us is gone, headed up the river for the fort. I'm wise to their game, and now's our chance.
Oh, not tonight, George.
Yes, tonight, right now.
Oh, heavens. What do you want me to do?
Just stay out. Duck around to the back of the cabin, see? I'll get him out. Leave it all to me.
Well, all right, but don't slip up on this. You know what it means if you do.
Beat it. Get out of sight.
Oh, all right.
Doctor! Doctor!
Yes, yes, what is it, George?
It's Catherine. She's headed for the pool.
The pool? Catherine? Why?
Why, hurry, Doctor. She's half crazy. No telling what she'll do. Now, you go ahead. You know the way.
Good heavens, yes. Yes. Come, quickly. Follow me, George. You sure she went this way, George?
Yes, yeah, sure. Hurry up, Doctor.
All right. All right. There. There's the pool, right ahead.
Now, take a look over the bank.
Here, Manny, what?
He's gone. Kate, open up quick.
Well, George, what happened?
Just as I told you. It's okay, girlie. Worked like a charm. All the police in the world will never find out a thing.
Well, tell me, George. Oh, I've got to know. How did you manage it?
Why, simple enough. You remember that stuff that Henry made up for putting animals to sleep when he took them out of a trap?
No, what was it?
Well, he had it in a blue bottle on the shelf. Chloroform, mostly. But it acts instantly. Henry told me it would put a man out in 4 seconds. Get the idea?
But that wouldn't kill anybody, you poor simp.
I know. Well, he was ahead of me. When he leaned over the bank, I gave him the works on the handkerchief. He went out like a light. Then I pushed him over the bank. Saw him go over the rapids. He drowned before he came to. Pretty neat, eh, girlie?
Oh, shut up! Get me a drink, for heaven's sake.
Oh, all right. Here you are. Take a good one. Pretty soon we'll miss Henry, see? Then we'll drift back to the fort and say he's lost. When they find him, there won't be a scrap of evidence to tie us up with it.
All right. I hope it's that easy. You better clear out now. I want to figure things out.
All right, Kitty. Pleasant dreams.
Mon, Sergeant. Are you sure of this?
Dead sure, Angus.
But you haven't any evidence.
I haven't, eh? You wait and see.
But Sergeant, you know this is serious. They're guests of the company.
Oh, yes? Well, they'll soon be guests of the government. Shh, look out. Here they come. Good evening, Mr. Manning. Evening, Mrs. Gibson.
Listen, Sergeant. I've got very serious news for you.
Really?
Yes. Dr. Gibbons has been missing from our camp since last night. We've searched everywhere.
Then?
Yes, you see, Sergeant, I didn't worry yesterday. My husband's off and out all day. But when he didn't return last night, I got anxious.
Yes, I see.
Come on now, Sergeant. Don't look so solemn. We want action. Well, the doctor may be hurt in the bush somewhere. I want a search party. Now, how about it?
Just a minute. Mrs. Gibson, will you step outside a minute? I want to talk to Mr. Manning.
But I don't see.
Sure, go ahead, Kate. I want to talk to him, too.
All right.
Now, Mr. Manning, what did you want to say?
Just this. You get busy with that search party, or I'm going to have a complaint to make when I get back to Ottawa.
What sort of a complaint?
Well, what's the idea of putting that Indian to spy on our camp?
That, Mr. Manning, was because I was concerned for the safety of Dr. Gibson.
The what? Say, what is this comic policeman stuff, anyway?
Furthermore, I have information that you made an attempt on the life of Dr. Gibson at 11:40 last night.
Why, you're crazy. That Indian went back to the fort last night.
Unfortunately for you, there was another Indian. Not 20 yards from you, when you pushed Dr. Gibson into the water.
It's a dirty lie. I never did it. Why, you're trying to frame me.
Look out. Stop him, Angus.
Look out now.
I didn't know, Manning.
You can't keep me here. You can't prove it.
Just a minute. Manning, there's somebody here I want you to meet. Come in, Dr. Gibson.
Henry! Henry!
Alive.
Yes. No thanks to you.
George Manning, I arrest you for the attempted murder of Dr. Gibson. Anything you say may be used against you as evidence.
But listen, I want a lawyer.
Go on. Get inside.
You have heard the 7th episode in Blair of the Mounties. Our next chapter portrays a detective adventure of Sergeant Blair in England, entitled The Hammerton Mystery.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.